That, of course, is the theme to Prisoner, On the Inside by Lynn Hamilton. I played it a few weeks ago at the start of our history quiz on famous prisoners. We got talking about the show. It turned out so many of you had great stories. So tonight we're delving into what made this groundbreaking women's prison soap opera such a success within Australia and indeed around the world. Following the lives of the inmates and staff of Wentworth like Joan the Freak Ferguson and B. Smith, the show ran for 7 seasons from 1979. It's been replayed countless times. Having missed it, it's an original run as I was just a little bit too young. I've even been watching it recently. To give you a behind-the-scenes look at how it was made, I've got with me Ian Bradley in our studio with me. He was co-writer and producer on Prisoner. Hello, Ian. Welcome.
Thanks very much.
And we've also got one of the stars of the show joining you as well.
You're getting another visit, aren't you? Well, if you can, so can I.
Oh, no, you don't. If everyone goes asking Dave for extra visits, she'll stop them for all of us.
And what makes you so special?
My friend's respectable.
He's still an ex-crim, though, isn't he? Just like Mick. Except, of course, he works for the Screws. I suppose that's why you like each other so much. You're both bloody top sucks, aren't you, really? Get out of my way.
Latham, break it up!
That was character Chrissy Latham giving some trademark lip to another inmate. She was played by the wonderful Amanda Muggleton, who is here too. Hello, Amanda.
Hello, my darling. Honestly, to hear that again, some of the things we had to do and say were fabulous. I want to go back and do it all again.
And you were just off air before we started. You even used that term top suck because yes. It turns out, Amanda, you are actually a huge nightlife fan. So you're part of our nightlife family. You were giving me top suck.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. And talking of Tom Waits, I think, didn't Reuben Kay play some Tom Waits the other night along with Rufus Wainwright? I mean, I loved listening to him when you had him on. Wasn't that you? Did you have Reuben
Kay? See, you really are listening. That was just last weekend.
Yeah, it was fabulous. I love it. And I love doing the challenge, but I'm too scared. I'm a scaredy cat to ring up and answer any of your questions in case I make an idiot of myself.
I wouldn't
want to hear a connection between Reuben Kay and Prisoner.
Go on.
We did a story about a prisoner who was a talented artist and was brought out. It was based on Jim McKay's story. And she drank herself to death, couldn't stand the adulation. And in fact, it was Reuben's father who did all the paintings for us.
Oh, my goodness.
Eleazar Krum.
Wow.
He's dead now, unfortunately.
Oh, I know Reuben's mum, and I know Reuben very well. He's a wonderful, wonderful man.
See, connections absolutely everywhere. Now, nightlifers, I want you to get involved if you've got a story or indeed a question. 1-300-800-222. Now, Amanda, I understand it was Ian who cast you on the show,
yes.
Even though you hadn't actually been able to get to an audition. How did you manage to talk your way onto the show?
Well, I don't know if Ian remembers an actress years ago called Nano Nagel, and she looked very much like Val Lehman, and so she got an audition because I think she either was going for the B. Smith part or she was going to be related to Val Lehman. She got an audition when she'd never done anything much, and she said, I went to my agent and said, I really want to go for this. And she said, no, Amanda, we can't. They want very experienced actors in television. And I said, look, you're either an actor or you're not. Anyway, to cut a long story short, Nano Nagel, she got an audition and she said, well, why don't you just turn up with me? So I did. It was the most frightening thing I've ever done, and I would not be brave enough now to do it. But I turned up with her, and of course, there was what you call a cattle call, which was every actress in Melbourne was going for it, of course, because it was such a thrill. And as people were going in through a door, everyone's bottom moved up into the next chair and the next chair and the next chair until you actually got to very close to the door where you went in and auditioned. And there was a woman there saying to everybody, name, and she was checking us all off this big list. So she got to me and she said, name, and I said, Amanda Muggleton. And she looked down the list, she turned the page, looked down the list. No, she said, you're not on the list. I said, what do you mean? What do you mean I'm not on the list? Are you telling me that I've been sitting here for an hour and a half waiting to go in and do my audition? I'm all geared up to do it, and you're not going to let me in because my name's not on a list? I said, where's a phone? Because this was before mobile phones, and because it was 79. She said, what do you want a phone for, love? I said, well, I've got to phone my agent. I mean, this is the second time this week this has happened to me. I made up this whole cock and bull story. And, of course, she said, all right, just calm down. And I remember Elspeth Ballantyne was in the room. And who else was it? It might have been Colette Mann, who ended up being Doreen and Meg, the screw. She let me in. And I got in, and there was the wonderful Ian Bradley. And I think if you remember this, Ian, you were looking at me, first of all, to play Marilyn.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, and I wasn't quite right for Marilyn. And he said, look, there's this character coming in. We only want her for 2 weeks, but we want her to kill the doctor. I said, I'm your girl. I can do it. I can do it.
Well, I was looking for somebody who was really pushy. So she cast herself, really.
So yeah. You remember this, Ian? You remember all the initial casting?
I remember the impression she had on me. I had written the episode with the riot, and Chrissy was the murderer in the piece. And I took one look at her and thought, she's exactly right for it. So.
Thanks a lot, Ian. You didn't know what had gone on outside in the waiting room.
No, but I knew how pushy you were.
Apparently that spoke for itself, Amanda. But now, as we were saying, though, it was meant to be 2 weeks. How did that turn into 3 years?
I don't know. I think, well, in my fantasy world, the audience loved my character so much. They wrote thousands of letters and said, we want Chrissy Latham back. But Ian might know why came back.
No,
I don't know.
Our intention originally was because she was a murderer, that she would simply be arrested and carted off. But she made such an impact that we figured it was worth bringing her back. And eventually she actually played the mother of my son.
That's right, Lucas.
She had a child in the show, mm-hmm. and I just had a baby at the same time. So my son Lucas became her baby, Lizzie.
Yeah, poor Lucas. How's he doing?
He's never lived it down.
He's never got over being dressed up as a little girl, a little tiny baby. Oh, God, he was a beautiful baby, wasn't
yes,
he?
Yes, it was hell shooting with him because we didn't take him into rehearsals for obvious reasons. Mm. And we did the scene and everybody was ready to go. And they knew it was a little boy, but it was supposed to be a little girl. And we bring him in and put him in and start the scene. And almost immediately, the first thing that Bebby Bobbitt said is, oh, isn't he beautiful? Cut, let's do it again.
You're on Nightlife on ABC Radio. I've got Amanda Muggleton here. I've got Ian Bradley here. We are talking about Prisoner. Nightlife is, if you have any stories, if you've got a connection to Prisoner that we haven't already heard about, because we have been talking about it a bit over the past few weeks, give me a call, 1-300-800-222. Now, Rosemary in Victoria, you have a story for us. Hello, Rosemary.
Hi, Suzanne. Well, I've got fond memories of an episode of Prisoner from about 45 years ago. One of the episodes involved an escaped prisoner. And the night before filming of this episode, this is a bit foggy, this memory, but the people whose property was to be used opted out. So Joe Battaglia, who was a friend of ours and was a cameraman on the series, asked us if they could use our property. And because we were so busy in our business, we just said yes and left it at that. We had a few acres in Clematis, which is near Emerald in the Dandenong Ranges in Victoria. And the next day, very early in the morning, about 10 or more vehicles arrived on the small unmade road outside our house. And there were caravans of all sizes and a huge catering truck and a few pretend police cars, supposedly looking for the escaped prisoner who they'd heard was hiding out on a farm. Because this happened also quickly, we didn't have time to move a ram that was protecting our very small flock of sheep. And he was a truly nasty ram and wouldn't let anyone into the paddock. The ram's name was Bar. And because this all happened so quickly, we never did find out if Bar had attacked any of the crew or the actors.
Well, Ian, do you have any memories?
We didn't get any claims. Yeah. And I'm thinking that this was the story of Frankie's brother who'd got held up by the police, and she was taken out there to try and talk him down.
Yeah.
It was about 30 episodes in, yeah.
Mm, that sounds about
right. Now, Rosemary, we chatted off air before and you said that because all of this happened so quickly and suddenly there were what looked like police cars outside of your property, the neighbours were all really wondering what was going on.
Yeah, well, they thought there'd been a murder in the house because of the presence of the TV cameras and the police cars. And anyway, that was a good story in the district for a long time. And as there were no news story about it, an angry ram battering a program, we just presume there was no incidents. But we never did hear from anyone from the channel, so we don't know what happened.
Right. And did you actually see the episode, Rosemary?
No. We were just starting a business at the time and we were really busy. And my biggest regret was not letting our daughters, who were only at the time, we were only 9 and 10, and we didn't let them stay home from school to watch the episode. But no, we didn't.
Oh, that would have been such a claim for fame for
yeah,
them.
Well, well, that's right. Now in this great distance, we would have liked to have had at least a letter saying thank you, because that we could have showed that around to all the neighbours.
Wow.
The only time we've ever been on television or any association. Mm.
Well, we'll have to find our production manager, if he's still alive, and ask him why he didn't send you a letter.
There you go, Rosemary. You may get the recognition that you deserve all these years later. There's Rosemary. Now, if you've got any kind of connection to Prisoner and you'd like to ring in, maybe you've got a question to ask of Amanda or Ian, 1300 800 222. Now, Ian, let's just go a step back. You were involved right from the start. There was a British show within these walls that was also set in a women's prison. Was that kind of the inspiration? I mean, because you came out from the UK to Australia.
I did come out from the UK, but no, that wasn't. It was a strange time. This is nearly 50 years ago. There was a company called TAPE, which is Television Audience Participation Evaluation, and they sold a service telling people what shows would work. And Grundy subscribed to this service, and for some reason they came up with the idea that the best show to make would be a show about women contained without men in a small area. So either a story about women's prison or nuns on an island, which seemed pretty peculiar to me. Thankfully, Grundy's chose the prison. And they sold the show to Channel 10. They got a writer who'd been writing The Young Doctors and whatever to write the first episode. And he was so depressed about writing about women in prison that he left it, and I just inherited it. There was nothing there except one script. There were no notes, no nothing. So I just had carte blanche to do whatever I wanted and developed it from there.
Yeah. Now, Ian, I understood, though, that the British show was mainly set from the perspective of the wardens.
That's right.
But you very deliberately said this show really needs to be focused primarily on the inmates of the prison.
Yeah. Well, when I saw the first script, it was actually called Women Behind Bars, which sounded like barmaids to me. But The thing that we were in Australia and therefore this is a convict country, doing the convict stories was a good idea. But in fact, what I found in the research when I was trying to figure out what the story was about was this profile of a huge prison in America where they profiled all the prisoners and all the staff and they came to the conclusion that they were all equally dishonest, equally bad-tempered. The only difference was that the staff were slightly more violent. And that led me to the idea that, in fact, what we do is call it prisoner and make everybody in the show a prisoner. They were a prisoner of their circumstances. Mm. So they might be in prison and they're imprisoned. And if they deal with that well, they're heroes. Or somebody like Vera, Vinegar Tits, as they call her. I mean, she had an old mother that she had to look after. So she spent every night at home with the old lady, every day in the prison with the prisoner she hated. And so she took out all her spite on them. So we made everybody a prisoner in the show. And I think that's what made it work so well, because everybody had a backstory. They weren't just some people who are just functionaries. Everybody really had a story.
And none of the characters, therefore, were really one-dimensional, were they? I mean, no one was inherently good or inherently bad.
No, well, the most important thing to me was if we had a bad character, we had to find out why that was so, and then we could do that, use that in the show. Frankie was a very popular character earlier, and she could very easily have been just dismissed as a violent lesbian. But we went into the fact that she was an abused child, she was illiterate, and really what she was looking for was love rather than anything else. And she just didn't know how to find it. And that's really what caused her to be so antisocial. But once you give people those sort of rounded nuances, the audience is interested in them and they become real people to the audience, and that's why the show works so well.
Mm. Now, Ian, I suppose, I mean, something like Number 96, I guess, although I'm not entirely sure, had already been on TV, so Australian audiences had already been kind of provoked. But were there some people who were kind of shocked by the idea of portraying prisoners sympathetically?
Well, the network was shocked when we delivered the first episode of the show. I don't know what it was they were expecting. Maybe they were expecting something like Number 96, where women take their clothes off for no reason whatsoever. But they were so upset about the toughness of the show that they got an American executive producer from As the World Turns or something to come out and tell me what was wrong with the show. And she said it moved too fast, the characters weren't attractive enough, the costumes were too loose, the hems were too low. I mean, they had a totally different idea of the show we were making. I mean, the real thing was to make it credible, and none of those things would have been credible.
Mm. Ian Bradley is here, producer and writer of Prisoner. Also, I've got with me Amanda Muggleton, who acted in Prisoner. Amanda, I mean, you just described going to auditions and kind of the who's who of the female actors in Melbourne were there. Was it exciting to have the opportunity to work on a show in which women were not the minor characters?
It was amazing, and it's all due to Ian Bradley that the characters were so gritty and meaty. You know, up until Prisoner, the only roles we had were wives of policemen or prostitutes or bashed up wives. I always felt sorry for Linda Stoner and Paula Duncan, who were playing police officers in Cop Shop, but they had full makeup on, full eyelashes and shiny lips, and they used to get their guns out of handbags. You know, it was crazy. Prisoner came along, it was dirty, it was gritty, it was real, and that's what people got worried about, that it was so real. You were actually a fly on the wall in a prison with very real-looking people who were allowed no makeup. They did end up shortening my skirts a lot. And us girls were always in the toilets with Vaseline on the ends of our eyelashes and a bit of Vaseline on the lips and a bit of rouge. You know, you'd find anything just to try and cheer yourself up. But, of course, you'd get in front of the camera and they could see it, so it all came off again. But it was wonderful fun to pretend to be someone who was so out of the ordinary. Mm. You know, we weren't ordinary looking and we weren't acting ordinary parts. It was very, very exciting. And it's a great shame, you know, that it's not continued, although it did so many seasons.
But and it must have too, I mean, not working with men, you know, just basically a pretty well female workplace there. It must have been such a different atmosphere from working on other programs too.
In the end, of course, men did come in. I mean, I had, you know, nobody told me how I got pregnant, but I did. And there was a theory. No, I won't say how I thought I got pregnant, but there were men, you know, there were men screws. We had Fletch the Lech, and we had all sorts of male screws coming in. And thank God that they were there too, because it balanced it up. Mm. But we as women had great fun in the green room, which was filthy. People think it's all so glamorous, but, you know, and back then everyone was smoking. And of course, I never did smoke, but I had to smoke in the series. And I used to have a vomit bucket on the side of the stage of the set. And I'd smoke and then throw up. Because back then, you know, in the 70s and early 80s, it wasn't considered bad. Yeah. Now you hardly ever see it.
This is Nightlife on ABC Radio. Now I do have a couple of callers to have a yarn with. Hello, Bob.
Oh, how are you going?
Yeah, well, what are your memories of Prisoner?
Well, I used to be a kid in Melbourne, and we used to drive past the old old studio in Nunawading. And I said, what's that over there, Dad? And he goes, that's a prison. You know? And I said, oh, really? You know? And I was only, what, I don't know, 10, something like that. And and we're driving down. Mum was, we were going into town around Burwood. And I said, you know what that place is over there, Mum? And she goes, what? I said, it's a prison. I didn't know it was a TV station.
Well, in fact, we did use the studio as the prison exterior.
Yeah, you did.
And that was simply because we didn't have any money to go anywhere else. We just dressed the studio wall and turned it into the prison.
They were all fake. All fake windows, all those little black windows were just stuck on, and every now and then they fall off. This is not Bob Sled we're talking to, is it?
No, this isn't Bob Sled.
Bob from Yass.
Oh, Yass, yeah. You're near Canberra now.
Yeah. One of my dad's friends used to work at the 7-Eleven factory just down the road from the production studios.
And we used to come in there and get all sorts of things.
Well, no, not me, mate. I didn't have sticky fingers.
Thanks, Bob. Nice to talk to you. We've got Peter in Western Australia who wants a word. Hello, Peter.
Yes, good evening.
Hi. What are your memories
good
of Prisoner?
Evening. Yeah, I was just an apprentice at the time. I was very intrigued with the show itself, on how these women could actually be like that. And, you know, some of them have come across quite rough. But my mother was very, very strict. I was an apprentice at the time. And once the show for the evening had finished, come on now, off to bed, off you go. Because I worked very long hours back then as an apprentice. And that's one thing that does stick out in my mind, is how she made me go to bed after the show was finished.
But you'd watch Prisoner with your mum and then go straight to bed?
Yes, with my mother and my younger brother and my father.
Oh, the whole family would sit and watch.
The whole family would watch it.
Who was your favourite character?
Oh, gee, that's hard to say. The governor. The governor was interesting.
Darling Patsy King. She's gone.
She died this year. She was interesting.
This year.
But some of the names that they were given, you know, I even don't like repeating them to you now, you know, vinegar tits of all things. I just find them very hard to repeat.
And Fletch the Lech.
Oh, dear.
He was one of the screws,
yeah. Thanks, Peter. Some very fond memories from people of watching Prisoner, because I guess it really goes in, places people a certain time in their lives. Now, Ian, when John from Sassafras, who had played Officer Green for 3 years, he said, but he never really had kind of more than one engaging line, you know, in an episode. So he'd just get all the kind of, you know, leftover lines that someone had to say. But he did say that it had ended up being sold to so many countries overseas, and he thought it was hilarious that, you know, he could be in Thailand and there he'd be, you know, his one line would be dubbed into Thai or dubbed into some other language. Why was it so successful internationally, do you think?
Well, I think the theme of women being in charge and dictating their own destinies is a universal theme. It was particularly at that time when women were so very much second-class citizens. To see a show where they ran everything just had universal appeal. I'm amused about them talking about the language there, because we sold into America, and it actually outrated Johnny Carson in a couple of markets in San Francisco. And the only one time when I was producing Prisoner that I ever met Reg Grundy, he flew over from America and we went to lunch, and he said, you know, it's doing very well, but could you please stop the women from swearing, because I can sell it to more territories. And I said, if I went back to that studio and told those women that they had to stop swearing so you could sell the show in America, they'd lynch me. The idea that they would be doing it for anything other than the validity of the character just wasn't on. They were just like prisoners. I mean, Amanda was saying how uncomfortable the green room was. On one occasion, Colette Mann went to see the television studio manager and said, we've got terrible furniture, get us some new stuff. And the manager said, we haven't got any money. And Colette said, well, you've got good furniture in here. And she got the crew up and they took his furniture out of his office and took it down to the green room. They were just like the women in prison. They were just playing themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, for you, Amanda, I mean, it's not like, you know, there were the time in the past was necessarily a time when women didn't swear more. But I mean, were you actually, when you had to do all that swearing, was it a bit out of character, or did you all get a bit of a thrill swearing so much?
Oh, we loved it. I mean, bloody was used and bastard, but that was about it. And bitch, you know, but it was very tame swearing. There's a fan in London who put a sequence of things together, and it's called Chrissy Latham, All Men Are Bastards. And he's edited every time I said the word bastard, and it's one of the funniest things you'll ever see, because I'm saying, you know, he's a bastard, she's a bastard, all men are bastards, let me go, you bastard, I told you, you bastard. God, I better not say it anymore, we're on the ABC. But it just went on and on, with where he just put everything together. But thank God we were allowed to say things like that. I mean, imagine being in prison and not being allowed to swear. The other thing I just thought of when you were talking about it going around the world, the fan mail we get still is unbelievable. But we did get things from Alcatraz. Do you remember that?
I do remember that. In fact, on the 25th anniversary of the show, they had a big reception out at the studio. This will be 2003, I guess, something like that.
Mm.
And a couple of fans had come to this reception from America, and they were too young to even been born when the show started, but they came to give me a special message from a prisoner in San Quentin, and the message was, thank you for making prisoners for you human beings.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
People.
And yeah, I think that explains entirely the success of the show.
Everywhere. I mean, in London, it's, I still can't walk down the street sometimes, and it's when I open my mouth, it's the timbre in my voice that they recognise, even though I'm not talking like that. You know, they somehow pick up on it. But years ago, I went into a hotel in Russell Square, and the man who ran the hotel was Greek, and I walked in, and he went, oh, my God, he said, you're Chrissy Latham. And then he picked up his phone and dialed a number and said, Reggie, you'll never guess who I've got here. And he put the phone across to me, and I was talking to Reg Cray. Of the Cray twins. Absolutely true, if I never see you again. And I had no idea for a minute who I was talking to. And then I realized he was in prison. But, you know, I don't know how this chap who was running this, like a bed and breakfast place in Russell Square, had his number. But that's how powerful those two were in prison. I mean, of course, they're both dead now, but that was, and apparently I was a huge pin-up in all the prison cells because I had a Cockney accent, and they all thought I was the bee's knees. But it kind of touched all sorts of people all around the world.
I guess I hadn't actually just thought of that until you both mentioned the idea of, you know, people were watching it on the outside, but people were obviously watching it on the inside as well.
Yes, yeah, incredible.
All right, now Jen is going to join us. Hello, Jen.
Hi.
What's your prisoner story?
My prisoner story, I was in high school when it was shown in the UK. So I used to stay up on a Sunday night into the small hours of the morning just to watch Prisoner without my parents knowing, and I'd be going to school the next morning.
Oh.
And I've watched it so many times on YouTube, Foxtel over the years, and I still love it.
Oh, thank you, darling.
I even remember the protests when Central decided to take you off the airwaves.
Who did?
Central Television.
Oh, in England.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, because it was so rough, I suppose, yeah. Oh,
no, it was actually because it was being axed by Central.
Oh. Oh, and there were protests. I see. Right.
Yeah, there was protests, which... didn't you go to, Chrissy?
What, to England?
Yeah, for the protests. I know Val went.
Yes, I mean, we often went over to England because it was such a huge draw card. I remember we landed in Manchester Airport. It was Val Lehman, Carol Burns, who was Frankie, Sheila Florence, me, and who else was it? None of the Screws came. It was just us. And there were placards and everything. Welcome, Chrissy. Welcome, Lizzie. You know, it was incredible. It was a huge kind of march, hundreds and hundreds of people. And we had to have a police escort to get... I know, it sounds crazy now, doesn't it, when you look back?
Yeah. Well, Jen, thanks for your call. Now, here's a SMS from Chris in Forest Lodge. I'm loving this. When Prisoner was being filmed, Val Lehman sent her son, who was 13 at the time, to boarding school. I went to school with him in Barrel in New South Wales. At certain times, we were allowed to watch TV, and he'd call out, "Put Mum on!" as they were all watching TV. Bernadette says, "There was no one like Lizzie Birdsworth, the unique Sheila Florence." Yeah, what a character. Now, Amanda, I understand that when you had the baby who ended up being Ian's son.
Lucas.
Yes. People ended up sending baby clothes in.
Oh, it was unbelievable. We had toys, babies' clothes, old prams, you know. It became like a huge charity because they all thought I had nothing, you know. Mm. And so Chrissy needed something for the baby. It was Channel 10 was inundated. And it was wonderful because people really believed that you were the people that you were. And I can remember going into supermarkets trying to get myself some food, and people were steering clear of me at one point saying, "What are you doing out?" And I'll never forget one Christmas. I had bags of stuff for Christmas presents, and there were two policemen walking towards me. And as they came to me, they both separated and they put their arms through both of my arms, which had packages in them, lifted me off the ground and said, "What are you doing out of prison, Latham?" and did like a pretend arrest. I mean, it was crazy time. We went on the floats every Mumba. We were, you know, in our characters on the float for Mumba every year. Oh, crazy, wonderful times.
Yeah. Let's talk to Karen in South Brisbane. Hello, Karen.
Oh, hi. Sorry. That was a surprise. Look, I was just wondering, no one's really mentioned much about Cornelia Francis.
Oh, darling Corny, yeah.
And I really feel that that program shaped her character for all futures. Like, then she got The Weakest Link. She was kind of like, you know, the female villain of the time. Like, I don't think she would have ever got a nice lady role ever.
I think you're thinking of The Young Doctors.
Yes.
Cornelia wasn't Sister Scott in The Young Doctors. Which I also wrote.
I'm dreadfully sorry. But, you know,
but it's all right because Ian's saying, Karen, that he wrote The Young Doctors too. So, you know, he can speak to this.
Oh, good. Well, so I do apologize because I mainly watch these programs with my grandmother, who would be, Days of Our Lives, General Hospital, Bold and Beautiful, Prisoner, Youngs and Young, so you understand how they can kind of blend.
Yes, nurses versus prisoners, oh yes.
So I can't believe, to your producer, whose name I can't recall, that you were criticised for the fast pace, because I really think that's the thing. Having watched the American programs with my grandmother for many, many years, well, not actually physically sitting there, but the thing about them is they're so slow-paced.
I absolutely agree. I watched a lot of daytime television when I was a teenager. Gosh, there's nothing worse. And yet Prisoner moved along at a really good clip, didn't it?
Well, that's why it became exhausting to be writing it.
And playing it. Yeah. I mean, it was 2.5 hours a week, wasn't it, Ian?
No, it was 2 hours a week. Don't know.
Don't quibble, Sybil.
It wasn't supposed to be. I don't know. We originally were only commissioned to make 5 1-hours at 1 hour a week.
Yeah.
And when we delivered the pilot to the network, they hated it so much that they were going to cancel. But instead of cancelling, we did an audience survey to see what the audience felt. And instead of cancelling, they came back and said, no, we've changed our mind. We won't cancel it. We'd like 52 hours.
But it was hard, hard work.
It was a tough schedule.
So, Ian, when did you decide that you'd had enough?
Well, as I explained, I developed the concept and I developed the characters, and we were getting research from all around the world in order to find the story sources. But unfortunately, so many stories were somewhat the same in that, you know, it was men had done the wrong thing by women, or almost invariably there was a man at the core of the problem. And after
it usually is.
Yeah. But after about 2 years of doing this, I remember it vividly. We used to do the storylines on Mondays, and I would stand in the shower on Monday morning, showering and running through what the stories would be for the next week before I went into the storyline meeting. And I was standing there and we were about to do episode 132. It lives in my memory. And I thought, I thought the story we were going to do, and I thought, we've done that. And then I couldn't think of a single story that we hadn't done. And I felt, that's it. That's as much as I can contribute to this show. I should go. And I actually went off and developed a series for CBS Cable, which didn't get made, but 10 years later became the ABC series of Embassy.
Oh, wow.
Which ran for three seasons and in
Chrissy,
the 90s.
Yeah, Chrissy, what brought your time on Prisoner to an end?
Well, I was very, very lucky. Grundy's were very good to me because I was also working very hard in the theatre world as well as television. I was doing both. And the Melbourne Theatre Company used to give me roles. And then I'd go to the writers and say, look, in 4 months' time, I've been offered the role of blah, blah, blah with the Melbourne Theatre Company, or I did a big commercial thing. And the Grundys would write me out, or Ian would write me out, or the writers, and just let me go. So my storylines were fabulous. So I had a lot of what we call OBs, which is outside broadcasts, which was great fun to get out of the studio. And they'd create a story so that I could leave. And then you think Chrissy's going off on a wonderful tangent and she's going to be a good girl. And then she did something naughty and back she came into the thing, the prison, which was
very high rate of recidivism, hey, Chrissy?
Yeah, it was really stimulating.
Oh, hey, Amanda, but, not Chrissy.
I don't mind. Betty. the wonderful thing was that it was one of the first television series that touched on so many important issues for women. I mean, there was lesbianism, there was domestic violence. Help me out here, Ian.
Rape, abortion.
Rape, abortion. All those things that were taboo came out in the Prisoner series, which was wonderful, dramatic acting for us girls. And when you think of the people who went through Prisoner, who became very, very brilliant actors, it was a wonderful stepping stone for so many wonderful actors or actresses. We're not allowed to be called actresses anymore because of the money situation. You know that, don't you, Suzanne?
I didn't know it was about money.
Yes, it was Julia Roberts stood up and said, this is nonsense, you know, why is it that my co-stars in films are getting much more money and yet the film is all about me and my character? And so they stopped the name actresses. So we are now, I think in the Oscars, it's the best female actor, because actress, as you said earlier, Ian, you know, women had such a bad time of it financially. And that was the other thing that happened. We didn't get any residuals for doing Prisoner. And I'd like to put a shout out for the Prisoner fan club called Partners in Crime, who have helped so many actors from Prisoner and Neighbours who worked. I think Neighbours got residuals because they came after, but we girls in Prisoner, you only got your weekly wage, and then it didn't matter how many times Prisoner has been repeated, and you know how many times it's been, 5, 6, 7 times, we never get anything back from it. So it's been hard, but the Prisoner fan club is so big and wonderful that they've helped out a lot of people who struggle when they leave these soap operas. I was lucky enough to go into other things and lots of theatre, but a lot of them didn't.
Amanda, Ian, our time reminiscing about Prisoner has come to an end. Thank you so much for coming into the studio tonight, Ian, and Amanda, for being here on Nightlife with us. It's been so wonderful to have you, and I know the audience have loved it too.
Oh, well, it's been gorgeous and talking.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Amanda Muggleton, who played Chrissy Latham in Prisoner, and we've also been talking with Ian Bradley, who was the writer and producer on Prisoner too.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.